I think if you're constantly focusing on, is this going to sell, is this popular, you're really setting yourself up to be wounded by rejection in that. Whereas treating yourself and gifting yourself with your gift values who you are as a person.
Welcome to the Creative Chats Podcast with Mike Brennan. Welcome, friends, to another episode of Creative Chats. It's the podcast for artists, makers, and content creators where we talk about creativity, the creative process, and story. Now, today is a bonus episode. Yes, I am coming out with this episode on a Friday, and I realize if you're listening at some other point, that may be irrelevant to you. But for anyone who has subscribed, and wink, wink, if you have not subscribed yet, it's very easy to do so. So that way you won't miss an episode. Anyway, I have an episode with a friend who is a visual artist and a musician. And her name is Lynette Penny Gainham. And she comes all the way from Scotland. And I loved just chatting with her because it was just such a delight. I mean, you'll hear it in our conversation. We laughed a lot, and she's just very pleasant to talk to, and loved how she shared her experiences from childhood and how she engages with her creativity today. And I think you're going to enjoy it as well and have a new friend in Scotland. Also, a little aside, we had some technical difficulties in recording, and so we didn't record the normal way that we do usually, and so there's a little bit of noise and some audio buzz, so I apologize for that, but we will be back on track with our next episode with clean audio, and regardless, I hope that you can look past that and really enjoy this conversation. So here is my chat with Lynette. Well, hey, Lynette, I just want to thank you so much for joining us today on Creative Chats Podcast. Excited to have you here.
My pleasure to be here.
So I would love if you could just give us a bird's eye view of who are you, what do you do? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, I live in a little shire called Ayrshire in Scotland. I live here with my husband and my twin boys. And my daughter lives in Glasgow nearby, and I am currently sitting in my studio, which is out my back garden overlooking fields and hills and glens, and I work mainly in acrylics, and I also do wire sculpture.
Awesome. I love that. I love the Shire. It's bringing Hobbit images to my mind.
Felt, yeah, very, very, very Hobbitsville.
That's awesome. Cool. Well, I would love to start with just asking you a question about way back childhood. Do you have maybe like a memory associated with creativity, whether it's, you know, drawing, painting, or maybe it's music, or maybe it's just some game that you used to play that really signified to you like, yes, you are a creative person and this is something you want to pursue?
Well, my mum would tell you that I did art rather than play with dolls. I just always did art. But if I was to think of something that epitomises my sort of out of the box creativity, it would be that probably from about the age of 6 or 7. I don't know if you have them in America, but at school they would give you a little gold star, a sticky star. Yeah. If your work was good, and the aim was to always get these stars in your book, you know, and if you got a coloured one, it was okay. But if you got a gold one or a silver, you know, that was great. Well, I used to have a little purse, and in the purse was lots of little stars. And I used to stick a gold star to my forehead. and I would go up town down the city and walk around with my mum and imagine that I was a princess from another planet. So that probably epitomizes that I was, you know, always maybe a little bit different, a little bit a dreamer. And so my creativity has always sort of followed that vein. I did walk in one day to a friend's house with the star on my forehead as a laugh. and they thought I'd kind of lost the plot a wee bit, but because I'd told them that story. So.
That's awesome. Well, I love that it's not just a princess, but it's a princess from another planet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I did not belong here. I always felt like, you know, it was a mistake that I was born here and into the life that I had, and that really I belonged elsewhere. You know, I think, you know, it was my form of escapism, you know. But yeah, I also kind of do feel like that, like I don't quite fit in. So that's okay.
Yeah. I think that's really common for artists because of that whole thing of just there's a certain part of us that wants to be unique and a certain part of us that doesn't want to be unique, you know, because
that's so true. You know, that is so true.
It's that tension that we need to manage, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's, you feel so insecure and you want to be loved, but at the same hand, like, I don't care what anyone thinks, but we do.
So to walk us through, like, what did creativity look like you then as you developed into things as far as, you know, I know that you said you're doing your wire sculptures and your acrylic painting. You're also a musician, right? And you play multiple instruments. So how did some of that come about? And like, walk us through just some of the past of, you know, what that looked like for you.
Okay. Well, in terms of instruments, like most people that in school, you get the chance to learn an instrument. So I learned recorder at school, and I was also in the band, the brass band. I played the cornet, I played the tenor horn, I played the euphonium. And then I stopped there when they started getting really big and too heavy to carry. And then I didn't really have anything to do with it for a long time. And then gradually I just started picking up the recorder again. I actually had a lot of dreams about being in a huge room and sliding back the wall and there being all these instruments that I had access to. And over the years, I started to collect instruments. So I have quite a few different instruments from all over the world, some that I can play quite competently and some that I can't. And also to write songs, I decided to learn guitar. I'm not an accomplished guitarist at all. I probably know about six chords, so I could probably play along with the Beatles quite well. or Elvis. But it's enough for me to write songs. I have a favourite percussion instrument called a shruti box, which is it's like a squeeze box, and it creates a drone and you can just sing or you can just go anywhere in that sound. With art, as I said earlier, I've always done art. I've always made things. And, you know, I can remember years ago as a child emptying out the inside of a felt tip pen and putting it into water and colouring the water and then filling the jar full of marbles and then just sort of sitting staring at it and staring through it. And so I've always had art just as part of who I am, always used it, whether it be in home decor, whether it be, you know, whatever I decided to make or turn my hand to, whether it be painting or sculpture. And I actually worked in pastels. I hated paint. I hated the thought of holding a paintbrush and having a stick between me and my work. But gradually I started to use acrylics more and more. And so I probably have done that for 20, 30 years. And again, sculpture was always on the peripheral of that. But more so, it's become the forefront of what I do. It's the thing I love the most. It's the thing I do for me and for my pleasure. And I guess I'm just kind of realizing that I can share that with other people, you know, by doing like wire tree classes and things like that. So yeah, that was a big long sentence, but I hope that
That's awesome. Is there something that for you drives you to create? Like, what's the underlying thing for you that makes you go, yeah, I want to write songs. I want to create these wire sculptures. I want to paint. What's that driving force, do you think?
I believe firmly that we are creative beings. We don't have a choice. We actually don't have a choice. So, for example, you can walk into a room and you can create havoc. You can create peace. You can create a lighter atmosphere with humour. Even choosing not to do something, not to participate, not to bring to the table what you can bring, you are creating a void because no one can fill that space. So I believe it's just an integral part of who we are as human beings. It's just that some of us identify more as artists than others. But when I'm teaching about it, I would say to someone, well, who dressed you this morning? You know, do you live in an empty box? You know, who picked the colour for your wall? Who picked the colour for your floor? Who picked what you were wearing? And even when that, maybe that image that you wear reflects in a negative sense, you're still communicating. And it's all communicating. Creativity is communicating something. And so that is what drives me, is I know that I can't not create. And yeah, it's just a natural flow of who I am.
Yeah. I think you're right in that when you're wired like that, you can't not create, because when you have those moments or those seasons sometimes where you don't create, it really messes with you.
Yes, it does.
And that's what happened for me was, you know, I took a 10-year absence from my art and didn't realize at the time the effect that that would have on me until it ultimately led to a place of depression.
Yes.
And then coming back to my art, it was kind of like a rising from the ashes type thing. Yes. And I'm so very thankful that I have that back in my life now. But it's definitely one of those things where, you know, some people, it's just very easy to undervalue showing up and creating, even if it's in the smallest ways. Because, you know, when you're wired like that, that needs an outlet.
It has to
come out. And even if it's not drawing, painting, one of the more, you know, sort of obvious, you know, artistic ways.
Yeah.
I think we are all creative, like you said. And sometimes it's creative problem solving. Sometimes it's creative, you know, with business mindedness. Yes. You know, sometimes it can take all these different forms. And that's why I love to have all sorts of different people on the show, you know, not just visual artists, not just musicians or, you know, the ones, again, that we would naturally think of. But I have business leaders. I have people who are entrepreneurs and that kind of thing, too. And in probing all the stories, there's always that thread of needing to create something, wanting to make something for themselves, but then also to serve the people around them, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's like an expansion of yourself. You know, one of the things I do that was a sort of surprise to me was cooking. When I was younger, I hated cooking. I mean, my daughter, she's 30 this year. She was brought up on like fish fingers and pizza and oven chips. I hated cooking. And then one year, I don't know, in sort of mid-2000s, there's a chef we have here, Jamie Oliver. I don't know if you've heard of him in America. And it was like the lights went on and I saw the colours and the textures and the flavours. And I just suddenly woke up to the creativity and the artistry of cooking. And so for me, even if I'm not painting, and even if, and I have went through depression too, I'm only just really coming out the other end of that just a couple of years ago. I would be in the house in my pajamas, in my house coat, and I would make soup. And I would just make pots and pots and pots of soup, or bake cakes or whatever. And I think it's cathartic. If there's some kind of outlet, you feel like you're still, you know, creating somehow. And for me, that's definitely my happy place. you know, is to be making soup.
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You talked a little bit about this before, but I'm wondering if you have more thoughts on just how you said, you know, there are some things that are definitely for you.
Yeah.
You know, this art form is for me, and I'm not starting from this place of like, what does the market want? What can sell best? You know, that kind of thing. But it's really just a more a love personally. And then you said, you know, sometimes there's a way of sharing that. Do you think that there are things that, do you have things where you say, you know what, this is just for me, and it's never going to be shackled with, you know, having to have, you know, finances attached to it. I don't want to place a demand on it. Mm-hmm. And other things where you just go, you know what, that definitely is for the marketplace, and that definitely is for other people. Like, is there that distinction for you?
Yes, I would say it would be more to do with individual pieces rather than a style. I never painted for myself. I never created for myself, especially when I went into business. It was always, will this sell? You know, will this be popular? I would do pieces that were popular and then do recommissions. And by about the sixth or seventh recommission, I was going off my head because it's the most boring thing to do. But I never thought about the investment in myself, about something for me. And actually, it took my dad dying in 2012. I stopped painting. And I think grief does that. Grief really puts you into a whole different place. But what I've also found with other artists is they begin to create something that they hadn't done before. They can't do the thing they were doing, but they seem to find solace in doing something else. That's when I started making the trees. And I sat and I made this, it was massive, big tree, day after day, just sat winding the wire, very cathartic. And it was called Beauty for Ashes. And it was for me, and it was for my dad, and the grief, and the loss. But it also birthed something new. I don't know if you can see in the background, the tree that's standing there next to the picture is a tree that grows just down the road from me. And every time I pass it in the car, I'm like, I love that tree. I want to photograph that tree. I want to make that tree. I'm making that for me. Mm. And I'm making it to the best of my ability. And it's for us. It's for our house. It's to go in our space. So I've learned the value of that, and that I really think it's a healthy balance. I think if you're constantly focusing on, is this going to sell? Is this popular? You're really setting yourself up to be wounded by rejection in that, whereas treating yourself and gifting yourself with your gift values who you are as a person.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know the times when I've been tempted to, or I have created things where I think, oh, this is going to be a good thing that sells, this is going to be really resonate, it falls flat and it doesn't resonate with people. I think because people can tell you bring a certain energy to it.
Yeah.
And when you're not in love with the thing yourself, people can tell, and then they're like, well, if you're not in love with it, why should I be? You know.
Yeah, although it does work the other way. I must admit, I've got art pieces that I created and I hated and someone's walked into the room and burst into tears and be like, that's for me. And I'm looking at them like, are you mental? And they've told me the value. They've shown me the value to them, how priceless it was to them. So I've actually experienced the other extreme as well. But I do know what you mean. You can walk in with that air of desperation, like, please like it, please buy it. And people just don't respond to that at all. So
That's funny. So you've mentioned the trees and just even the tree locally to you. What else inspires you? Like, what are the other things that maybe are around you, or themes or things that seem to inspire your work?
Color, definitely. I remember I go through wee seasons of a color being the thing. And I know that's a really artist's thing to say, but it's true. I can remember being in IKEA and I'll see the red that I'm into, and it's got to be this specific red, and I make this beeline towards a towel or a duvet cover, and it's the red, you know, and it seems to bring this light inside and this buzz, or it might be turquoise. Very much sound and colour together for me really resonate. I teach a lot on the sound of colour and the colour of sound, and so for me it's never just a piece of music and it's never just a colour, it's about the resonance of those things. I'm inspired obviously by nature around me and that kind of thing. I like looking for the unusual and the quirky. I'll go out a walk and I won't photograph the nice sky and the, you know, I'm looking out my window, if you wonder where I'm looking. Yeah. Over there. But I'll look for the sunlight coming through a tiny little hole in a dry stone dike wall, creating this little portal of light. That'll attract me. I think someone else called it the finer things in life. It's looking for those gems that everyone else walks past. Mm. But you see it, you spot it, you know, and catch it. So
yeah. It's funny. I think sometimes, you know, when you're an artist, you take for granted the way that you see things, right? Yeah. I know that's true for me, where one of the first times I realized that this wasn't like a normal or ordinary thing was when I started talking about some of those kind of things with somebody else, and they're like, what are you talking about? Like, how do you see that? Like, what? Like, they're like, you see shadows and light and things? And they're like, I don't understand that. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, it never dawned on me that, yeah, you know, not everybody sees that the same way. Yeah. And that's the thing that's beautiful about being an artist, is your perspective, your point of view, yeah, and being able to create something with those set of lenses and helping other people to see things, absolutely, you know?
I remember meeting a lady I hadn't seen for years, and I was telling her all, because I was right into resonance and, you know, just releasing your resonance, your sound, and I was really into it, and I was telling her all about it, and she told me later, she goes, I actually thought you'd had a mental breakdown. She thought I'd lost it, you know. I don't know if you guys have heard of David Icke. She thought I'd just kind of went a bit loopy. It's all about revelation, isn't it? It's about what is revealed to us. And perhaps some of the job of artists, not completely, but some of our job is to reveal that and explain it to others, that they might then enjoy that revelation as well. And sometimes it's just got to stay a mystery. And that's okay too, you know?
Yeah. And there's the thing that is also part of the mystery part that you're talking about, where we may create something from a certain standpoint, but somebody else sees something different in it, yes, and it takes on a new meaning and a new life for them.
Yes. You know? Yes. That's like, remember I was mentioning earlier about the person walking in and seeing the painting. I had created this little square pink, I don't even paint in pink, this little pink box thing, you know, with acrylics, and it had a ribbon, a sort of Hessian ribbon around it. It was the most grotesque thing I've ever created in my entire life. It was disgusting. It was like pink icing, frosting. So this woman walked in and she started crying, and I had all my lovely artwork everywhere, and she saw this one thing, and I'm looking at her, and she said, I know that I'll probably never get married. She's, but I just feel that it's like, this is my wedding cake. You know, that I'm being given this wedding cake. And I mean, she was in bits. And I was just looking at her going, wow. Mm. Wow. You know, that was incredible.
Yeah.
I love the many different interpretations that people can bring to a piece that you just don't see at all.
Absolutely. Know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the wonderful thing about art, is once you create it, you kind of release it, and then it becomes its own thing, and it finds its own home. And to know that you've had a part in that is a wonderful thing.
Absolutely. I've found that it's almost like I feel like I'm on a treasure hunt sometimes. A lot of the songs that I've written were actually inspired by paintings that I did years before. And so it's almost felt as if there was a song embedded in the painting that I created that I didn't even know was in there. And vice versa, I've created paintings out of songs that I've written. Now, that's a bit more obvious, but to go back and find a song within a painting, it was so magical. It was so, so cool, you know?
Yeah. It's funny because I was going to ask you about that, if there was any intermingling between the paintings and the songs and stuff and what that looked like. So have you done also live painting, is that correct?
Yes, I do that a lot. Yes, an awful lot.
Did you have like anything where you had to get over doing, you know, doing your craft in front of people, like immediately? Like, can you talk a little bit about that process maybe?
I probably, when I was a wee child, I quite liked being on the stage. I didn't mind the attention, quite liked it. and so painting in front of people came easy to me. I've painted literally in front of, probably the biggest crowd I've painted in front of was about 7,000 people.
Wow.
And that's at an event called David's Tent down in England every year. It doesn't bother me. I find it more difficult something like this. I've nothing to hide behind. This would probably make me more nervous than if you said to me, Lynette, see in about 10 minutes, could you just get up and speak in front of 10,000 people? I could do it because I'd bring a message and I'd be behind that message. When I'm painting, it's not about me. The focus is on the painting. Yeah, I'm quite happy doing that, and I've trained a lot of people in that. I've done a lot of teaching about it and about how to not panic. The worst thing, you know, you're in front of the canvas, you know people are watching, and you're about to paint a face, and you know that every time you paint a face, it comes out looking like somebody's melted, you know? And you're like, I know everyone's going to witness this. So, you know, about, you know, being able to step back from that and just be like, it's okay. It's okay. You know, yeah. And to allow yourself to make those mistakes and that it's all right. It'll be okay. You can fix it. Mm-hmm. I actually quite enjoy doing it.
I've done it a few times. And the first time I was really nervous because I was like, I don't know how this is going to go. There's so many variables that could go wrong, right? So I was trying not to like psych myself out before I even got up there to do it.
Yeah.
And then the first time was with music. So there's a band on stage. And so that helped because I wasn't the sole focus. And so and then I found myself getting so into the music that I was reacting and painting to the music, which was a cool place. Cause then I just kind of got lost in it and I really got into it. And people said after the fact that they could tell that I was just, it was like everybody just went away and it was just me and the painting and the music. And then the next time was actually when someone was speaking on a stage. And then again, they were really the main focus and I'm kind of doing something off to the side. So that I think helped as well. And having had at least the first time doing something live, at least I had a frame of reference. And so it's definitely a very different process and to some degree skill set, I think.
Yeah.
Because you have to turn off that voice that's
the perfectionist.
Perfectionist and the imposter syndrome thing and all that kind of junk that rises to the surface.
I think though I've experienced getting up there like I used to decide that I wasn't going to know what I was going to paint, so I wasn't going to prep. I wasn't going to do sketches. I was just going to go with the flow, and that was the most pure form. So I've done that. I've also set up my easel, set up my canvas, put my paints out, and had nothing. and had to go through that embarrassment of everyone expecting me to paint and me doing nothing. And through that, I realised that I was putting myself through an awful lot of pressure. And so I do all different types of it. I go into it not knowing what I'm doing, or I've got an idea and I'll make a sketch, or I want to draw this specific figure, but I'm not sure how to do it. I'll Google image something. I've let myself off the hook and, you know, decided it's okay. It's okay to do those things. It's not cheating. And it just removes that pressure and that potential to get the mental block where you don't do anything, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny too, because I look at now, you know, now I'm sketching, live sketching events, right? I mean, you saw me do this. And
oh, fantastic. Your work is fantastic. Oh,
thank you. But that's a very different experience for me, because it's on an iPad. It's not up on an easel as big as life in front of everybody, right? And so I found that it was an easier entry point for me, because it was a little more personal and intimate. And I still have, you know, people like to look over my shoulder and ask me about it and stuff like that. And that's fine. And I love that. But it helps me be a little bit more contained in the process, just even by the tools that you use. You know, it's interesting.
I just loved what you did. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. I loved how it was very in the moment. So looking at one of your sketches, you were literally capturing a moment in time of someone speaking and then a quote of what they were saying at that moment. I loved that. It was so good.
Thank you. So, yeah.
I've never seen that done before.
Well, thank you. And that's the goal, is really to create snapshot moments that, you know, a year later you can look back on that and go right back to that moment and go, yeah, I remember that. I was there. I was part of that.
Yeah. Oh, it's great. Really, really good. Enjoyed seeing you do that.
Thank you. So I think we're just about at time, but I want to ask one last question. And I'm wondering, can you share with us a piece of advice that someone gave you that was really instrumental in your business or art?
Probably off the top of my head, one of the things that sticks out to me is one thing Matt Tomey says about do the thing you love. And we talked about that earlier, is it makes such a difference when you're doing the thing you love, not just for your mental health or your spiritual health, but also people pick up in that. They pick up that you're doing something you love, and it makes it much more intriguing and much more interesting for them, because you're not talking out of head knowledge about how much you've learned about it and how, you know, smart you are, but actually it's coming from your heart, and that draws people. People are intrigued by that and want to know more. So I'd say that was a pretty big one that I've learned the long way around.
Sure.
I've done it the other way first, and then I'm realizing, okay, right, what do I like? What do I want to do? So yeah, I would say that.
Nice. Yeah, and that's a good word for us, because we really need to be dialed into who we are, what we love to do, the things that make us come alive.
Yeah.
Because if they make us come alive, odds are they're going to make other people come alive too.
Absolutely. It's like a light going on, and people are like moths drawn to a flame. It's fascinating when you meet someone who feels alive and who has vibrancy and passion. You want to hang out with those kind of people, and you want to learn from those kind of people and figure out what their secret is, and you know, get in on the act, you know. It's yes. Like what is going on here, you know. And I'm certainly drawn to people like that, so yeah.
Awesome. Well, real quick before we go, where can people find you online? How can they follow you and check out your art?
Oh my goodness, the technical bit. Okay, you can go to Penny Lane Studios on Facebook. I'm also on Instagram, and pennylanestudios@gmail.com is my email if you want to write to me personally. So yeah, I guess those places to start off with. I'm hoping to expand that. I'm a bit of a technophobe and have resisted. I've resisted this this technological age we're in, but I'm having to throw up my hand and admit I need help. So I'm getting there. But yeah, you can find me there.
Sure. Well, I'll put those in the show notes so that people have easy clickable links to find you. So
that's great.
Awesome.
Thank you so much for having me on. This is
absolutely. I love talking to you. You're such a joy and a pleasure. I love laughing with you as well, too.
Yeah, we did a lot of that, didn't we, at the call?
Absolutely. You have to.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Lynette.
All right. Ta-ra.
Thanks for listening today. I'd appreciate it if you would subscribe, leave a rating and a review. It really helps this podcast be seen and heard by others.